Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, April 17th. I'm Ray Graff, and I don't travel. I rarely even leave the house, but I think about traveling. Exotic places and sunny beaches and ancient ruins where I'm walking on the dirt of ancient civilizations. Yeah, but the game is on. But you might travel. And if you have a travel question, give us a call. 800-348-2551. Jean Gagdon is here from Plaza Travel Center in Latham. She is a travel expert. She's ready to help you solve your travel conundrums. 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Jean's a popular guest, so I recommend you get your question in early. We'll be back after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're joined again today by certified travel counselor Jean Gagnon. Jean is the president of Plaza Travel Center, a woman-owned business since 1969. The Institute of Certified Travel Agents awarded her the designation of certified travel counselor in 1985. Jean was an adjunct instructor of travel and tourism at University College of Syracuse University and Schenectady County Community College. At Plaza Travels, Jean specializes in VIP travel, custom planning, international itineraries, group travel. You got a question about travel? This is the person to talk to. 800-348-2551 is the number to call. 800-348-2551 or email us voxpop@wamc.org. Jean Gagnon, how are we doing?
We're doing good, but you know what, Ray? I'm thinking we could have answered three questions in the length of that intro. I think we got to shorten
it's
that
only
up.
67. What are you, my producer? No. In which case, I got a whole list of assignments for you. All right, I'll do what I can. You know what? Here's Jean Gagnon, and then over to you.
Okay.
That's how I'll do it from now on. So what's new? You doing any traveling?
Oh, gosh, I'm leaving next Thursday. I'm going to Croatia.
Wow, you're taking a group, eh?
Yeah, I am. Small group, but I'm really, really interested in it because I'm hearing how similar the cuisine is in the north to Italy, because if you look at a map, it's really just right around the corner.
Yeah.
You know, so looking forward to the cuisine and the beautiful ancient cities. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
And so you do the – I didn't realize that you did this a lot throughout the year, so you're going to be – this is early of the year, so presumably you're going somewhere else this year as well.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to try to get a bunch of people to go with me to Japan in October. To Japan.
Now that
which I've never been to.
That's
before.
A long flight. How long does that take?
Oh, God. Can I not think about it?
No.
But it's like 14, 15 hours.
Can you get there by train? 14 or 15 hours in the air? No, thank you.
Well, I did that when we went to South Africa. And yes, it was horrible at the time, but it's like anything else. Once you're in a bar having a drink, it's just a story.
You know what? And you know, I think I've talked to you about this before. My wife and I call that the Disneyland effect or Disney
yes.
World effect.
Yeah.
You go, you despise it. You're sweaty. Kids,
right.
People are yelling
right.
at their kids. Week later, you're like, well, there were some good parts.
Yeah,
2 weeks later,
fine.
You know, that was all right. A month later, we got to go back.
Exactly.
Jean Gagnon is our guest. It's travel today on the show, and we already got a stack of emails here. 800-348-2551. Our own Lucas Willard asked a question, and I thought maybe you could demystify this.
Okay.
He wants to know, can you take film for a camera through an airport scanner and have it remain intact?
Yes, you can.
You can.
Years ago, it was a problem, but yes, you can now.
Okay.
It has something to do with the technology of the scanners.
No, very interesting.
Yeah.
And now that almost no one uses film, I guess it's I'm glad they worked that out. This is from Gene, who wrote a while back and then resent the email today. I find the economy flight classes confusing, especially since some airlines have their own lingo and some classes overlap. In February, we plan to land in Geneva for our cultural and culinary snowboard trip to the French, Italian, and Swiss Alps. Most of the upgrade perks, like free drinks, deluxe menu, priority boarding, and dedicated overhead space, are of little value to us. More legroom and a changeable ticket would be nice, but hardly seem worth the additional $300 to $1,000. We'd rather spend our money on food and fun in the Alps. Please demystify the economy classes.
Okay, I love that question.
Okay.
Okay. So we know that there's an economy section.
Yeah.
And most people do call that economy. However, when you're going to buy an airline ticket,
yeah,
you can either buy a basic economy fare or a regular economy fare. Now, basic economy fare, we actually try never to sell because it is totally non-refundable, not even changeable. You bought it, you're stuck with it.
Really?
It allows no checked bag. Even if you wanted to pay for it, no checked bag.
So wait, if you're going overseas, economy, you can't even have a bag.
For the basic fare.
Okay.
Not for the basic fare. So we're talking about economy. So you have a basic fare. Sometimes it's called classic economy or standard economy, where you are allowed a seat on the plane ahead of time. You know where you're going to sit. You're allowed to check a bag. The ticket is non-refundable, but it's allowed to be changed.
Right.
So those are the two lowest fares. Then some airlines within that economy section, the 40 rows or whatever, have towards the front extra legroom seats. So they are the same size seats. They've just moved the rows a little bit further apart. Okay, it's maybe a 3 to 4 inch difference in pitch, which is the length between the two, distance between the two seats. All right, but you're still in economy. You're in the same economy seat. It reclines the same amount. There's no leg room except for that extra space. All right, so that's sometimes called Comfort Plus, Economy Plus, all different names.
Oh, my God. It's confusing.
Then some airlines have a new section. That is a small section, usually 20 to 30 seats, between first class and economy, that they call premium economy.
Oh, come on.
Now, those seats are a little bit wider, and they kind of look like the old business class seats. Remember the big square business class seats?
Nope.
That you would see when you were walking back to your seat in economy?
Nope.
Okay. Well, so for example, if there's 10 seats across in economy, there might only be 8 seats across in premium economy.
So
a little bit more room, more leg room, blah, blah, blah. Then you have business class, and then in some flights you also have first class. Those are typically, if you're going overseas, lie-flat seating, and those are the thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Now, for example, there was an opportunity for some of the people going on my Croatia tour that they paid economy, and at the last minute they could have paid $350 more and been in premium economy.
Wow.
Now, that's not lie flat, but it reclines more, it has a leg lift, and the seats are wider, a little bit better service.
Yeah.
So that's not a crazy amount to spend for an overnight flight.
Here's a question.
Yeah.
Now, back in the old days at Shea Stadium, I could go down, drive down and see a ball game and walk up to the window and buy the cheapest seat I had. And there was a little scheme where you talk to one of the ushers and you'd say, hey, you slip him a 20 and say, go down to section 102 and tell him you're with the senator and you'll get a better seat. Can you do that on a plane? Can you pop the stewardess of a 50 and say, hey, listen, what do you got?
No, but I do have some tips that I use, especially when I travel internationally. I try to get an aisle seat in the middle section, which is usually like 4 or 5 seats in the middle section, as far back as I can, but not the very last 2 or 3 seats, because then they're too close to the bathroom and people are gathering in the aisles. If there's going to be an empty seat, it's going to be back there, and it's going to be one of the middle seats. So even if somebody sits on the aisle on the other side of that middle section, we might have 2 to 3 seats to ourselves.
Okay.
That's a biggie. If you are going to try to move your seat, you have to make sure that no one else is coming on that flight. You have to make sure that the doors are almost closed. And then you can quickly move, but not into another class.
Okay, and the windows, too, apparently. I've heard about these planes that have the windows that fall out. So,
that was one incident.
All right. Well, I don't fly too much, and so that's enough
for me. There are 50,000 flights a day.
You know where that doesn't happen?
On a train.
Correct. This is from Mike in Saratoga. 5 days in Iceland. Any thoughts on a 5-day itinerary for Iceland? We're locked into that time frame. 2 couples in our 60s. What do we do? That's fine.
Okay, so you're going to spend a night or two in Reykjavik.
Okay.
You're going to go to the Blue Lagoon either the day you land, if you land early in the morning, because it's out towards the airport. So if you land at 7 or 8 in the morning, you can go there. They have lockers. You can soak in the Blue Lagoon a little while, you know, thermal waters, blah, 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 and then go to your hotel and do a normal check-in. Or you can do that on the tail end of your trip if you have a late departure from Reykjavik. And then you're going to do a three-day drive tour of what's called the Golden Circle, which are the highlights, the inland highlights.
All right.
And you can actually purchase sort of like a little fly-drive package that not only, you know, includes the car, it includes pre-booking the hotel, and gives you like an itinerary of what to stop and see along the way, how many hours and things like that. Perfect amount of time. I mean, you could spend more time. There's a lot to see there.
Okay,
but
no,
you can do it.
Is there, I mean, you know, there's Reykjavik, and then there's a lot of fish to eat, and then there's the Blue Lagoon.
Beautiful,
what else can you do?
Beautiful, beautiful waterfalls. You can actually stand on the Continental Divide. Mm. Not the Continental Divide. What's the divide? I can't remember what it's called. The two plates. Don't call in.
The tectonic.
Yeah. It's up north. But anyway,
okay, fair enough.
You can actually stand on that. But you don't have to call in and let us know.
We'll Google it.
Save the calls for questions.
All right. Well, you walked into that one, Gene Gagnon. It's travel today. 800-348-2551 is the number. Zach, the engineer, let's hit the music and take a break. It's been too high-paced for me, too fast-paced. I got to rest. We'll be back. Quincy Jones here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Ray Graff with you. It's travel today. Gene Gagnon is our guest. And one more email, and then we'll go to the phones. This is from Teresa. I'm trying to plan a week-long trip to visit family in Portland, Oregon, but given the increased frequency of fires in the West, I'm interested in avoiding risky seasons. Do you have any recommendations on timing and booking a trip there generally? And that's from Teresa.
Well, it's so hard to say because what with weather and climate and things like that. But summer is usually the time of the fires, you know, the heat, the dryness. The fall is a beautiful time to go there. Mm-hmm. And, of course, early spring. It's not going to be as green really early spring. But, you know, you can't tell as far as the fires go. That's really tough.
No, or the earthquakes.
Or the earthquakes,
right.
Or the rain.
Volcanoes.
Or, you know, it's weather, baby.
Okay, fair enough. Let's go to the phones now with Gene Gagnon. 800-348-2551 is the number. Michael in Ashfield has been waiting a very long time. Michael.
Yes, hi. Actually, I've been waiting weeks for this show.
Oh, splendid.
Yeah. So I'm going to be going to Cuba in January.
Okay.
And I don't know people who have gone there. So I guess, well, we're going to be taking a tour. And what we've looked into, which I guess you have to do.
Yes, you do.
What I've looked into, there's 9 days, 8 nights, which probably means more like 7 days with travel on the beginning and end, or 14 days and 13 nights. So I guess my sister and I are going back and forth on this. Is there one that would really miss out on a lot? Can you squeeze it into 8 days?
Well, yeah, of course you can. But, you know, you've got to make that decision. That's something that nobody can help you do. You can spend 2 nights in New York City. You could spend 2 months in New York City and you still wouldn't have seen everything. So you have to weigh the advantage of seeing more against the time away, the cost, et cetera, the laundry, you know, the dirty underwear, you know, you got to weigh all that, you know, back and forth to make a decision that's right for you. But I do have to say this. I don't think in the 50 years I've been in the business, I ever had someone come back from someplace and say, I wish I'd left Venice yesterday. Mm. Or this was too much time in Paris. It's always, I wish I had more time. So if it was me, you're paying for the airfare part of it already. Go for as long as you can afford.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, it's also how long can I stay away from my sweetheart here?
Yeah,
well, that's a good point.
So I guess, I know I have a million questions, but broad, what can I expect?
Well,
that's not too broad.
Well, okay, so it is very different, but whoever you book with will give you a long, long list of things to do and things not to do. They'll tell you that you can't use an ATM there. They'll tell you,
right.
Yeah, you know, that
why?
You can't, they don't have the technology.
Oh.
Is it that?
Yeah, yeah, your cell phones aren't good. And it's also the money change, the money change.
Yeah,
there's a big black market down there. Your cell phone isn't going to work. It's really cool that you're going to see all these great cars. You're going to feel like you landed in Back to the Future because all their cars are from the 50s.
And no rust.
Right. And plus they couldn't get parts, so they like kind of jury-rig how they fix them and everything. So that's always a good conversation. But the people are very, very friendly. Like on a lot of Caribbean islands, you're going to see a great deal of poverty. Then you're going to see, you know, an area that looks more wealthy. You know what I mean? It's you're going to see a big juxtaposition of that. So, but you'll have a wonderful time. The people are lovely.
All right, Michael, you got 12 seconds here, and then we're going to move it along. Go ahead.
Okay. I want to bring gifts because I heard that's a good thing to do.
Yes.
What do you suggest I bring?
Okay. I like tea towels because they're easy to pack and they don't break. Or little bottles, but you have to put them in your checked bag of maple syrup, stuff that's local.
Hard currency.
Okay? No, things that are local. Okay, so, yeah, that's what I
think. All right, well, have a great time in Cuba. Do they still have handlers and stuff when you go to the communist countries?
What do you mean?
You know, somebody who would be there watching you as your guide.
Well, that's why you have to sort of go on a tour. You know, they don't want you wandering around too much on your own.
All right, fair enough. Let's go to Tony in Lenox. Hello, Tony, you're on.
Hey, Gene. Hi. Ray, how you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Thanks.
Good. Listen, my question, my wife and I have been pondering taking a cruise. Neither one of us have ever been on one. We've got a lot of friends that have been all over the place, but I'd like to get her introduced to something that's not that long, but, you know, is fun, not overwhelming, 3 to 5 days. Any recommendations?
Well, it's tough to go out of this area for 3 or 5 days and really get a feel for what cruising is like. Because if you cruise out of New York, I mean, you can take a shorter one to Bermuda, but that's about as far as you can go and get back in, you know, 5 days. Okay, so Bermuda would be a lovely first-time choice. However, of course, since you're going to Bermuda, you're crossing a larger portion of the ocean. You're not sailing on a river. So, you know, you might be a little concerned about the motion, but if you're not normally susceptible to that, it's normally not a problem for most people, except that you want to avoid the hurricane season, unfortunately, which is from May to October. So guess when they do most of their cruises to Bermuda?
In the warm
weather. So it's May to October. So, you know, you're really going to have to talk details with somebody. But another thing you could do is a shorter cruise would be on the St. Lawrence River. You could do like a 1 week cruise that goes from Boston to Montreal or Boston to Quebec. It wouldn't be as long.
Oh, that's right. That sounds really good.
Yeah, that's a fabulous. That's a really nice.
What about the Erie Canal? Do they do that?
I think there used to be, pre-pandemic, there was a local company that did
the whole thing.
Ones.
Oh, God, like
no,
the whole
no, they
thing.
They did like portions of it, but a couple
the
of cruise
Lawrence
lines.
Sounds really interesting.
Yeah, the St. Lawrence is great because it also stops up in the Maritime provinces in Canada. But another really interesting one that they have now is the Great Lakes.
Oh,
so that's another very interesting one. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Just don't take the Edmund Fitzgerald when you go, Tony. Thank you very much. 800-348-2551 is the number. Do you want to sing a little of the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald?
No, that's okay.
With me, the Gordon Lightfoot hit?
No, but I heard that the Q sang it once at a show.
Who's the Q? Oh, NRBQ?
Yeah, they sang it in a show once and people were booing, so they sang it again.
I was at J.B. Scott's in Albany, right across the street from the studio 100 years ago, and they did Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. From sheet music, those boys were 6 sheets to the wind, and it was tremendous. Let's go to Rhonda in Massachusetts. Rona, I'm sorry, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Great. Oddly, I'm from Ashfield as well, like Michael is. So I have been wanting to go to either Rwanda or Uganda to go see the mountain gorillas for a long time. And I started doing some research about all the permits that are necessary. I typically don't go with groups. I typically go on my own and get there and find a guide, et cetera. But I'm a little confused with the very little research that I've done as to whether I need to get the permit or whether the guide will have the permit and what other recommendations you might have.
Okay. Yeah, I have actually sent people on the gorilla treks. There's a couple of very, very good outfits, and they will help you get the permits. Okay, that you do have to go with some kind of group, even if you're only with that group for like 3 or 4 days during the actual trekking. Okay, so
Are those groups that you're referring to, are they local groups in the country, or is it groups that I would find here in the States?
You can find some in the States. I've used some out of the UK. Okay, but you do want to use somebody like that because you don't want to have any problems with your funds. Even if it's to someplace international, I usually try to use a U.S. tour operator because you have options if there's an issue. You know, a member of the USTOA, which is the U.S. tour organization. So that's what I do. But, yeah, there are definitely tours you can take that will help you get those permits, you know, so that's what you really want to do.
And I don't suppose you're able to, on this radio show, name specific outlets.
It would not be a good idea, Ron.
No, I really can't. But I'm sure you can find a local travel professional, and they'd be glad to help you.
Well, have fun with the trip.
Wonderful.
That sounds great. Hey, Gene, you went to South Africa. Did you go to any other countries when you were there?
Yes, we went to Botswana and Zimbabwe.
Okay, so you stayed south.
Right.
Ah,
right,
cool. Right. That's awesome, though. That's great.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Let's now go to Calicoon. Eric, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about a sea voyage. I love being at sea, but I have no interest in cruising, per se. I've traveled many times on Hurtigruten, up and down the coast of Norway, the Svalbard, on small old ships.
Right.
I like rough seas even. I don't mind ocean motion. And Hurtigruten has expanded with expedition cruises in the Antarctic and Arctic. So they offer occasionally repositioning voyages where you're at sea for quite a while. You're not visiting ports. But 2 years in a row now, I've booked their voyage from Buenos Aires to Lisbon, which is I'm supposed to be on the ship right now. And it's very inexpensive. But 2 years in a row, it's been canceled, I assume because not enough people have booked it. But they don't really tell you why.
Right. Yeah, they don't.
So
they don't tell
I wonder
you
what
why.
Other options are. I know people used to be able to book a passage on a cargo ship to cross the ocean.
Yeah.
And I'd really like to have that experience of being in the middle of the ocean, but not on a ship with 5,000 other people.
I think one of the issues with that, Eric, is the liability has changed on so many different things. So I haven't booked a freight voyage in ages, and I don't know why, but that might be why. So there might be other things you can do.
Yeah,
you do have to just keep looking for that repositioning cruise. That's all I can tell you about that.
Uh-huh.
But there are other ways besides Hurtigruten to be on the sea. You can go to Turkey and do a small cruise on an old, I forget what they're called, the Turkish sailing ships, up and down the coast. You know what I mean?
So you
can do other things that use ships different way. You can even still do a Windjammer cruise up in Maine. They still operate. And that's on an old sailboat.
Right.
You know, so there's lots of other options besides the repositioning if you're more concerned about being on the water than you are about the ports.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, Eric, thanks a lot. Now, Gene, you've spent a lot of time on freight ships. What's that like?
You have to like a lot of chili.
But you've done it, right?
No, I have not been on a freight ship.
All right, let's go to Michael in North Adams. Michael, you're on.
Hey, Gene. Hey, Ray.
Hey.
I was calling in originally with a question about South Africa, but I heard a listener call in about Portland, Oregon, which happens to be my hometown.
Oh.
And I felt like I would maybe offer a little bit of local advice on traveling and best times to go. Well, Virus are unavoidable. Last year was a pretty clean year relative to previous years. There's really no planning around that. But if you're looking for the best time to go to Portland, hands down, it would be May and June. May is the beginning of the festival season. You have Cinco de Mayo Festival, which I've heard is the largest in the country, or at the very least on the West Coast. Right after that, you have Rose Festival, Gay Pride. Everything kind of blends in. Now the thing about Rose Festival in June is there's a local folklore that it always rains during Rose Festival. About a 2-week period where, you know, the rains come in, the festival grounds get pretty muddy, but then the roses bloom. So it's okay. Kind of you kind of get.
Have they thought about moving the festival to a different time? Have they thought about maybe if it's
you can't really control, you know, the botanical aspect, I think, of the Rose Festival. It kind of needs the rain. But,
all right.
Okay.
Yeah, I hope that she's still listening, and I hope that helps with her decision of letting go.
I'm sure it will. Thank
all right, well,
you.
Thanks. Thank now, you had a question about Africa, yeah?
Oh, I did. Yeah. And it'll be relatively quick. So my partner and I are going to be going to Durban.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard about the rickshaws in Durban. And I was doing a little bit of research actually last night on the rickshaws. And knowing the history of the country, I'm a little bit reluctant to do that. I just feel that maybe it's maybe culturally insensitive. And I'm wondering if the rickshaws are something that everyone can do. And it's sort of regardless of the social past of the country, or if that's
something.
Interesting, yeah.
You know, would be something to raise an eyebrow to.
Right. I think that's a question you have to answer yourself. There are many things that could be considered culturally insensitive, but they also provide an income. But would there be something else they could do if you weren't doing it? It's such a catch-22.
Yep.
I was on a bicycle rickshaw when I was in China, and it was a question, but I got to tell you, it was so much fun, and the men were like kind of happy. I don't know. It was like a fun thing. So I don't really I don't have an answer for that.
That's
Michael.
A good question,
I'm
though,
sorry.
Michael.
Okay.
And let us know how you did. Enjoy the trip. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Travel Today with Gene Gagnon. 800-348-2551. Let's grab a call or two more before the next break. Helena is in Amherst. Hello.
Hi. I'm calling because I'm really not a traveler, and I just, on a whim, booked a trip to Istanbul for mid-October. So it's a tour, but there seems like there's going to be a lot of free time, and I'm wondering two things. One, what should I make sure that I hit that's maybe a little bit off the beaten path? Because that's what I like to do, is I like to kind of wander around. And two, is there anything that I really should know before I go? I'm a little bit concerned that there's a lot of earthquakes there, and never having experienced one, I don't know what to do.
Well, Istanbul doesn't seem to have as many earthquakes as different parts of that country do, okay? Because it is on the coast, it's not in the mountains. So I don't know that that is really a concern. I would make sure that when I traveled, I had at least short sleeves, not a lot of tank tops, because it is mainly a Muslim country, and that's just respectful. You're going to be visiting a lot of mosques, so you always want to make sure to have something with socks on, because you may have to take your shoes off when you go to visit it.
Yep.
So that's just more comfortable to have socks on. Some mosques actually give you like little things to put on. But anyway, so you're going to see things like the Blue Mosque, and you're going to go to the Grand Bazaar. But I can give you a little bit of hints. When you're in the Grand Bazaar, okay, in the very, very center of the Grand Bazaar, like if you look at a map of the Grand Bazaar, the very, very center is a little square, and it's the Antique Bazaar. And you can buy things. You can end up getting some really cool souvenirs that are not typical souvenirs. You know, like I have a little oil jar. But you have to be careful that they're not too old, because you're not allowed to take antiquities out of the country.
Well, how can you tell?
You know, I can tell mine is, it's not like a, you know, thousand-year-old sculpture. You know, it's like a little oil jar. You know, but anyway, so that's one cool thing to do. I'll tell you what you do. Fromers.com is a great website.
Okay.
Okay. It's the old Arthur Frommer, who used to do travel years ago. And they still have a website. And on that website, you can put in Istanbul, and there'll be a list of what they call our favorite experiences or the top 10 things to see in Istanbul, because what you want to do is look what's already included in your tour.
Yeah.
You don't want to say, oh, I'm going to do this on my own, and then find out it's included in the tour. So you want to compare that back and forth. But I'm telling you, you will love Istanbul. Absolutely fabulous. You could go to the Pera Palace Hotel, which is where Agatha Christie wrote some stuff. They actually still have her room. You can have a drink there. It's kind of like an old British Empire kind of hotel.
Yeah.
There's another big hotel there that you can go to the top, a newer hotel, and you know, have a drink and you know, see a beautiful view. You want to definitely get a picture of yourself with one foot in Asia and one foot in Europe.
Right.
You know, so you'll have a great time. Have a great time.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. We got to take a break here, but
it's
go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Frommer, could you spell that for me?
Frommer, F-R-O-M-M-E-R.
Oh, okay, got it.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Splendid and bon voyage. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Gene Gagnon and Travel. We'll open the email bag in a minute. Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is our number. Ray Graff with you, joined today by Gene Gagnon from Plaza Travel Center. And Gene, we have some emails here, so let's see what we got. This is from Eliza. I'm looking for ideas for a family vacation in California. Third week in August, family of six parents, early 60s, four adult kids, ages 19 through 27. Dad will not do Airbnb. Mom likes a spa. We all like big trees and the beach.
Huh. Depends upon whether they want to move around or whether they want to stay put and for how long they're going.
Yeah.
Okay. So, for example, San Diego is fabulous because it's there's so much to see and do, and the weather is really, really good.
Yeah.
In the L.A. area, I love, love, love Santa Monica. Okay, because Santa Monica is on the water. You're on the beach or pretty close to it. There's a pedestrian promenade, Third Street Promenade, that has a lot of cafes and things like that. And yet you're very close to L.A. for anybody who wants to go to the Getty Museum or the L.A. County of L.A. Art Museum.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot. Or you can do the traditional things, Universal Studio, go down to Disneyland. I don't know, you know, what their interest. Now, the big trees, those are more up north.
Okay.
Okay. So then you got to look at, you know, do we want to do the Monterey Peninsula? Do we want to do outside of San Francisco? Do we want to do Napa Valley? You know, they might want to do winery hopping.
Yeah.
You know.
You ever been to Bakersfield? I've been listening to a lot of Buck
Owens. I was
going to
say
lately.
The song.
A lot of Buck Owens. And so I wonder, is it a music town like Nashville is?
You know, I don't really know.
Well, you're supposed to know everything about travel.
I know. I'm sorry. But that's more about music.
Okay, fine. This is from Roberta in Salisbury, Connecticut. My husband and I will spend 3 days in Amsterdam in early May. How should we fill our time? That's from Roberta.
Oh, love. When did she say she's going?
Early May.
Early May. Ooh, might be too late to get tickets to the Anne Frank House. But you should definitely try to see the Anne Frank House. It's really very moving. If you can't get in the Anne Frank House, there's a lovely short walking tour that goes by it and then also includes the Jewish Quarter, which is very, very good, very interesting. There's really good food walking tours, so you could do that for dinner.
Okay.
It sort of combines the idea of walking around with somebody who's telling you what you're looking at with stopping at different places and having something to eat at three or four different places. Those are fun. You also want to see the Rijksmuseum. That's where you'll see a lot of the great masters, Rembrandt, things like that. The Van Gogh Museum is incredible.
Yeah.
It's really, you'll see a lot of the masters there. If you want to take a day trip, it's really fun to go out to Zaanse. Chance, which is Z-A-N-S-E, is the first part.
Zaanse, Chance is the name of the place?
Yeah, Zaanse or Chance. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's
yeah.
just one word.
No, it's two words. It's Zaanse, Chance, shots. I don't know. You'll find it. Duran, but anyway, what it is sort of like a Dutch Williamsburg. Like they moved a lot of windmills there and old houses, and it's really very charming. You can actually go up in a windmill.
But it's not really old school. It's an artificially constructed, oh, here you go, tourists, here it is.
Yeah, but I think it's more the idea of saving the old structures and things like that.
Oh, that's cool. Right, yeah, right. Yeah, great.
You can go on a day trip to Edam and Volendam and Gouda.
Where the cheese is from.
Where the cheese is from. And also to the little town of Delft, where all the Delft pottery is made, which is really, really beautiful. Believe me, you'll have tons of things to do there. Very easy. And take a canal cruise. They're lovely. You know, you can take one at night and all the bridges are lit up,
yep.
Or one during the day. You know, a lot to do there.
All right. This is from Joe. Hawaii travel. We're visiting a family member in Oahu for 2 weeks in early May. This is our first time traveling to Hawaii, and we're debating on traveling to another island like Maui for a couple days. However, it seems like it'll be expensive. Do you think there's enough things to do on Oahu to keep us busy for 2 weeks? And that's from Joe.
Joe, I think there's enough to keep you busy there for 2 weeks, but I think there's enough to keep you busy in Albany for 2 weeks. So it really depends
upon
what your aspirations are. The other islands are less populated in their where their little cities are, but there are places in Oahu that are farmland, and you can go to a pineapple ranch, and you know, I think there's plenty of things to do there. Yes, you could fly to another island, but then if I was flying to another island, I would want to stay there 2 or 3 days. Either Maui, or my favorite island is Kauai. Kauai is stunning.
Well,
stunning.
A lot of volcanoes on that one, yeah?
No, the volcano, the one that's still active, is on the big island of Hawaii. So there's actually an island named Hawaii in the state of Hawaii, like New York.
I'll watch the Y5O. I know what you're talking about. Okay. This is from Julie, and then we'll do 2 more emails and then back to the phones. Gene Gagnon is our guest from Plaza Travel Center. Julie writes, the next total solar eclipse is August 2026 in Spain. Any tips on planning that far ahead to save money, get some reservations before everything gets booked up?
Airline tickets cannot be purchased until 330 days ahead of time. So you're in a quandary there. So that's one thing. Number two, the hotels you might be able to start doing maybe 18 months ahead of time. So you would want to do that because always the earlier you book, the more you save. But I would not think it's going to be easy. Because you're going to have to be on it and constantly checking to see, is this hotel taking bookings yet?
Yeah.
It's a special events like that are really difficult and they're really expensive. You know, like, Churchill Downs going to the Kentucky Derby or going to a Formula One race or something like that. Very, very
expensive.
The eclipse
could be seen from anywhere in a large swath of Spain.
But look what happened to the people that booked the hotels in Buffalo. You know, their hotel rooms were canceled. And this is Buffalo, New York.
Why were they canceled?
They're saying they were overbooked, but they were under contract for a lower rate 2 years ago. And then all of a sudden they were overbooked and bounced the people and they had to pay.
Okay, that's low. Yeah. That's not nice.
No, it's not nice at all.
I'm glad you didn't mention any names. This is from Tom, and then we'll go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Heading to Tuscany in May. A lot of people traveling in May. Flying out of Toronto to Rome. Any suggestions on what to do or any advice at all? And that's from Tom.
Absolutely. Depends upon where you stay in Tuscany. But I don't know if you're more towards the west or a little bit south, but you want to try to see the little village of San Gimignano. Lucca is a beautiful town, not really technically in Tuscany, but anyway. Cortona is lovely. Grive and Chianti, go to a winery. Go into Florence for a day or two. If you go to Florence, you're going to have to get your tickets to see David ahead of time. You might want to go to the Uffizi Museum in Florence, which has some beautiful classic art.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, the Duomo in Florence. It's beautiful. It's lovely. Okay. If you're flying out of Air Canada, make sure you give yourself enough room in case there's a slowdown at the border or something.
Yeah.
International flights, you have to check in 3 hours ahead of time.
All right. Let's go back to our phone lines with Gene Gagnon from Travel no, Plaza Travel Center. We've only done the show 1,000 times, and I can't get the name right. Let's go to Alan in Falls Village, Connecticut. Alan.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm traveling to Dublin and then on to France for about a month starting next week. And I want to be able to have cell phone usage. I've read a little bit about the new eSIM cards. Is that what you would recommend? And if so, for Ireland and France, do you have a brand that you favor?
Well, first of all, even if I had a brand that I favored, I couldn't say it.
Yeah,
but
generally
I don't. But I don't.
Yeah.
Because I've never been away for a month, okay? When I go away, I call my provider, my cell phone provider, and I switch to an international plan, which is obviously going to be more expensive than the eSIM card. So to be quite honest, I'm not sure if you're going to have to get an eSIM card in how long are you going to be in each country, roughly?
Going to be a few days in Dublin on each end of the trip, but
probably
3.5 weeks.
Well, then France is really where you really want to be concerned about it. You're just going to have to do more research on that because there are certain things that change so frequently and so many people have different plans that I don't even get into it. You know, I say call your provider.
All right. So. Well, Alan, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it. We'll go to Linda in Troy. Linda, you're on.
Oh, hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
Yeah, I'm an artist, so I'm an art tourist, and I'm planning to go to The Hague. I'm a big fan of Mondrian's,
mm-hmm.
and I was wondering if there's enough to do at The Hague to stay in that, you know, hang out there for a week. And also, I've been looking at airfares online, and it appears that, you know, that a lot of good value flights. You go fly into Amsterdam and then maybe take the train. So should I go to another city first? And I have been to Amsterdam a couple of times already. So
okay, if you don't want to do Amsterdam, the other option might be Brussels. There are nonstop flights into Brussels.
Mm-hmm.
Then you could do a little side trip to Bruges and then go to The Hague,
mm-hmm.
And then maybe fly out of Amsterdam or fly out of Brussels. So, but you can't fly nonstop right into The Hague. Yeah, they got to go into Amsterdam or Brussels, which are going to be your two closest. But
so it's Brussels, and then you recommended. I'm sorry, I didn't write that down.
There's a little town called Bruges, Bruges, uh-huh. is one way they spell
mm-hmm.
it. And it's just beautiful. It's just beautiful. It used to be a very, very large trading town because it was on an access to the sea, but then their passageway got all silted up and it just kind of like froze in time. So it's 300 or 400 years old and it's just beautiful, beautiful. So if I was going to be in that area, I would check out maybe going to Bruges also.
Okay.
So. Oh, that sounds like a good thing. I'll check that out.
Okay.
And you think that the fall is a good time to go?
The fall is better than the summer. You never want to go to Europe in the summer. Way too busy, way too expensive.
No.
But I have to warn you that even September has now become a high season in Europe because so many people are avoiding July and August that now September is a high season. So.
All right, Linda, thanks a lot. You talked to me before the show, and I forgot to bring it up, this business of over-travel. What is that concept?
Okay. The concept of over-travel. All right, let's take Venice as really the best and the best example and the one that's been in the news lately. Venice is trying to survive. It's built on top of poles in the water, basically, you know. And everything has to be done by hand there. They have to, you know, pick up the trash by boat.
Because of the vibrations and all?
No, it's just, there's no way to do it.
Okay.
You know, there are these little canals and things like that. The streets are swept by hand, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So out of the millions of people that visit Venice, I believe I read that it's like 3-1, the amount of people that go there for the day compared to the amount of people that stay overnight.
Interesting.
Okay, so you have, you know, 3 million people not spending the night, maybe coming in and just getting a slice of pizza, but using all the services, destroying, littering. You know, when I say destroying there, that just means walking around.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The use of the city. So they have now started a tax. They're right now in a testing phase, but they're going to start it in January 25, where if you want to go to Venice for the day, you have to go online and buy a day pass. Now, if you're going in January, it might only be $5. If you're going in July, it might be $50.
Huh.
Okay, because they want to be able to get money to help them keep the city.
Even for the day.
Even for,
it's like
more
congestion
so for
pricing
the day.
In New York City.
More so for the day, because these people aren't spending money. They're not investing in the money, which goes to the infrastructure.
Yeah.
And that tax, for example, will probably be exempt if you're spending the night.
Right.
Because you're having a dinner. You're paying the hotel. They're getting some money for it. And I don't blame them. The big problem of Airbnbs contributes to this because there are too many places to stay. So there's not enough infrastructure to handle the influx. Like Barcelona is going through a really difficult problem in the old quarter, where instead of being a community of people that are living there, it's a community of Airbnbs.
And you're not a big fan.
No, I'm not, for various reasons. I think it's totally different if you're going somewhere out in the country or in the Adirondacks and want to rent a lodge or something like that. But in a city, I like to support, number one, the people that live and work there, which are the maids, the concierge, the people in the hotel. And the other thing is there are just things about Airbnb that sometimes don't travel well, especially if you don't have a car.
Yeah.
So you get there at 7 o'clock in the morning. You can't check in. And you can't leave your luggage there.
Right.
Whereas if you get to Paris at 7 o'clock in the morning, you go to your hotel, have them watch your bags, you go out and explore for a little while. So there's reasons.
Interesting. All right, let's go to Elizabeth in Albany. Elizabeth, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I am planning a trip to Montreal in next month and have no idea where to stay in the city. So it's a question about hotel an area.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It depends upon what you like to do. I've been there several times, and I've stayed in Old Montreal. There's a couple of Marriott chains that have some of their lower-end properties, and Hilton also, like Spring Hill Suites, you know, the lower end of their chains, right in Old Montreal. So that's a fabulous place to stay. Another place I like to stay is up near the Fine Arts Museum. Walking distance to McGill Street, the university, a lot of nice restaurants, but two totally different areas. So it depends upon why you're going up there and what you want to do. If you've never been there before, I would try to stay in or near Old Montreal.
Okay.
Definitely.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks a
Have
lot
a great
for the
time.
Call. Appreciate it. Paul in Rhinebeck wants to know, the Windy City. 4 days in May, what do you do? I'm not a Cubs fan. What do you recommend?
Oh, my gosh. The Museum of Fine Arts there is really great. Like, you'll turn the corner, and all of a sudden, you'll see Grant's American Gothic, the original. Or you'll turn another corner, and there's the big the Island of Grand Jeté by, not Pizarro. Ugh. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Don't call him.
Passano. He was a painter, right? You know what I mean? Yeah.
Passano paints.
Yeah,
right. Anyway, so the Museum of Fine Arts is fabulous. There's also a great science museum there. They call it Museum Mile, and it's right along the lake. So that's a great thing to do. Get some deep dish pizza. Go to a blues club. There's some great old blues clubs there. So that's a fabulous thing to do. Go to the Magnificent Mile, which is all the big old shops and things like that. You can actually go on a boat cruise.
Oh, yeah.
Because they do have the Chicago River there and everything. So that's wonderful. A lot to do in Chicago.
You know, I went there once, I don't know, 25 years ago or something like that. And it was the Blues Fest weekend at the park, and it was out of control. It was great. And they also have a German section.
They
I think it's
German
over by Wrigley.
Section. That's fabulous. Yeah, I'm telling you, it's a great city.
All right.
Great city.
Let's see here. When would be a good time? This is from Gordon. When would be, and we only have 30 seconds.
Okay.
When would be a good time to visit Scotland? And what are some of the areas not to miss? Do you have a favorite place?
Oh, gosh. You know, yes. I love Edinburgh. I love the Highlands. Glasgow has come a long way.
Where?
Well, it used to be very gritty and more industrial, but now there's sort of like a new foodie scene and things like that. So, and that's not too far from Robbie Burns area. So you can visit that. I like the whole Loch Lomond area. And of course, you can go into the Highlands. You can go to the Isle of Skye. You could go to Inverness and see the Loch Ness Monster.
Oh, yeah. Oh, have you seen the Loch Ness Monster?
No, but I'm going next April, so maybe
are
I
you
will.
Really?
Yes, I am.
All right, Gene Gagnon, we are done. I will see you in a month or two, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Support comes from Orthopedic Associates of Dutchess County, orthopedic and spine specialists with Ortho Express walk-in centers in Poughkeepsie, Kingston, East Fishkill, at New Windsor, orthoadc.com to learn more. And Agricultural Stewardship Association, working to help people conserve farmland and forests in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve working land for good forever, agstewardship.org. Once again, thanks to Gene Gagnon of Plaza Travel Center for being here today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for the emails. Sorry if we didn't get to yours. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Andrea Leon screened the calls. Thank you, Andrea. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Astronomy with Bob Berman and Dr. Valerie Rapson. We'll see you tomorrow at 2.